I'm Kristen McFarland, and this is Market Like a Badass. I'm the founder and CEO of the Source Marketing Group, a marketing technology company in Colorado focused on highly regulated markets like cannabis and craft beer. The theme this season is innovation in cannabis tech, so you'll hear a combination of digital marketing and technology tips to grow your revenue this year. This season is brought to you by the Source Marketing Group. Today, we are going to hear from special guest and AI expert, Evan Nissen, founder and president of Nissen Co. Nissen Co. is a cannabis, psychedelics, and emerging industry public relations, SEO, and content creation firm rooted in advocacy. We are going to geek out on the future of AI and innovation in cannabis tech. And I can't wait because this is right up my team's alley as well at the Source Marketing Group. We are using LLMs and other tools to help business owners interact with their data in an easy to understand way. We are guiding other agencies and clients on their paths to automate more and do more with less, like bubbling up key movements from opportunities in the pipeline, or other ways to get sophisticated with AI, AI agents, automation, and more. So to our audience, get ready for a dynamic episode jam-packed with information to help you work smarter and market like a badass. Welcome, Evan.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on. I'm excited to geek out.
Same. Yeah, this is a great topic for me. Marketing and technology are basically my two competencies.
Hell yes. Well, and tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what you do, you know, in your own words.
Sure. So I started as an advocate in college, and I got one of the pens used to sign the New York medical marijuana law and what's called 911. Good Samaritan overdose prevention law that helps you call 911 during drug overdoses without fear of prosecution. And then when I graduated college, I initially actually got hired to lobby for a bill that I was supporting for free. And that accidentally, happy accidents rather, turned into the first cannabis PR firm. That was in late 2012. And then I started some other businesses as well. And that's when I learned SEO, and then for my own businesses, and then we offered SEO to our PR clients. We did well for them as well. Yep. So we offered that as a main service. And then more recently, have gone into AI, which I know, you know, we've been talking about, by also doing AI consulting. So now our real core competencies are, PR, SEO, lead generation, mostly using AI to help sort of, qualify and find the right people, and AI consulting, both marketing and not marketing related, actually.
Oh, that's huge.
So that's everything I do in a nutshell.
And staying on the cutting edge of what people need in this industry. So it's cool to see you evolving and catering from a technology perspective too to your clients, because, you know, there's a lot of ways that AI can really propel your business forward. But I think many are stuck with, like, how do I get started? How do I navigate this? So we're going to jump into those details, and I'm going to talk a lot about this with you, and I'll have a lot of questions teed up. But one thing I wanted to ask before we dive into your business background and more about your insights into AI is the most important question of the day. What are you grateful for?
Yeah, being able to do what I do every single day is really what I'm grateful for. My life.
Yes, yes. Well, I love that. And now, yeah, like I mentioned, I want to slide into more about your business background and insights. Before we talk about some marketing and whatnot, you mentioned, you know, some of your past already, but what made you decide to work in cannabis?
It wasn't working in cannabis. It was trying to stop cannabis arrests, really. While I was in college, my friends were getting arrested. Made no sense to me. I just started smoking like right after I graduated high school because I was fear-mongered my whole life related to it. And I sort of put two and two together. I also took an economics class that showed me on paper, how the drug war doesn't work. They like graphed out, you could see that the drug war didn't work. So for me, it was actually about ending the drug war and stopping the arrest of my friends. I actually remember when I was like 19 years old, I was in the High Times office, which was in New York City at the time. And my mentor and good friend, Rick Cusick, who was the associate publisher, told me, he was like, if we achieve our goal, someone's gonna have to sell this stuff. And like that hit me. I was like, oh yeah, we are also going to create an industry. So I started before I even realized that we were going to start an industry. And then it was right time, right place when there was an industry, really. But yeah. I
That's so cool.
was like, people did exactly what I did, a decade earlier, and did not have the luck that I did, and instead they were working, for nonprofits their entire life, or in jail, or gave up and had to do something else. But I was lucky enough that I got in at the right time. The industry actually, legalization actually happened, for the most part, the extent that it has, and there was an industry for me to join. And now I straddle sort of both the movement and the industry. I'm still on the board of Normal National and the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. And Students for Sensible Drug Policy, which are two grassroots organizations, in addition to the four profits that I do.
Wow, I love that. I mean, I think that's so important to give back and be a contributor in the space and communities that you want to work in, right? And not just take from, but finding ways to support, whether that's advocating locally, some people, nationally through the NCIA and other organizations, but make sure you're getting out there and helping this emerging market propel forward. And that is one thing I love about your organization and just you in general, like your work in the social equity space and in cannabis and supporting nonprofits and advocacy is huge. And so thank you for all of that work. And I guess tell our audience a little bit about why that's important to you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. I mean, generally, the easiest way to put it is, like I mentioned, I started before there was an industry, and now there's going to be an industry. And the movement that I was involved in helped create it. I wanted to be an industry that could be a shining example, for other industries in capitalism. I don't know if that will happen 100%, but I mean, it. I'm, I, but it, but. But we're the industry. This industry is at least better about talking about why that's important. And I think, it is definitely a better example than a lot of other industries, although there's a lot more to do.
Yeah, so much more to do. I just make sure if you're listening, pay attention to your local, do what you can locally, 'cause even just last week, right, we had to send a letter in support of, the Cannabis Business Office in Colorado because they're trying to strip funding and reduce the amount of money going towards the social equity program. And so pay attention to what you can do. Sometimes it's really, it's showing up in person. Sometimes it's things like, engaging your local representatives. We all have the capacity to help in some kind of way. And so, that's what we need more of. It can't just be, a few different groups that, we really need to come together and rally because we don't have that kind of money that other industries do, and I think that makes it hard sometimes to navigate, moving forward some of the things we want to in this space.
Yeah, 100%. And the pendulum swings in politics, throughout time consistently. That's one of the only constant things about politics. And I mean, that's just how the public and the media and society works. And at that point, it won't be an option. Like, in order for our survival, to be able to have things like over 10% THC products, and make sure that growing cannabis at home isn't illegal or a crime, things like that are going to be, they're going to go away if people don't organize eventually.
It's wild to think, but every day there's some kind of threat, whether you're looking at markets like Florida or just there's a lot going on. So making sure you're paying attention and finding a way to help be part of the change in this space. But now let's talk a little bit more about, you know, the marketing, the PR, the SEO, because that's a component of what you all do. And SEO and PR, I think, is really where you started, right? So tell us a little bit more about the importance of PR and SEO in a highly regulated industry like cannabis.
Yeah, so PR started very organically because it was the only tactic really initially to do. I mean, there was a little bit of SEO, but back in the day, you know, when I started Nissan Go, there was a huge amount of interest from reporters because this was the hot topic, and you couldn't advertise, you couldn't really do anything else. The public markets were also the hot topic, basically. So public relations was the avenue. I mean, there was very little else to do, period. That has obviously changed. We're still very limited compared to other industries, but we at least have, you know, as you know, avenues to advertise, and there are products on shelves for SEO, you know, at this point. Another interesting thing to note is when I started the company, I think between 0 and 10% of my clients had actual revenue. You know, they were either public companies that were like pre-revenue or early revenue. I don't think a single one was profitable. And now nearly every single one has revenue. Most of them are profitable. So the industry just went from, it's changed dramatically since when I started this, not even just once or twice, but many, many times.
Yep.
So with that being said, you know, like the main point of that story is that now public relations is still important, but it's part of a marketing mix. Mm-hmm. You still need to focus on organic tactics like PR, SEO, things that can't be as easily turned off by an ad policy change, something like that. But there are also avenues, like I just mentioned, to explore advertising and rewards programs and discounts and other sorts of ways to get customers in the door. So now, you know, even though those I mentioned our core competency is a lot of what we do initially early on with clients who want to sign on is say, like, what services actually make the most sense for you? Or is it PR, SEO, yes or no? But generally speaking, organic tactics are the best still, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and just always finding
Google Ads is great.
If you're finding a way to do organic and depending on the channel, just making sure you have a way to get it to, like, you know, your owned data as fast as possible, right? Use your SEO to get website traffic to capture your email, or, you know, add a new phone number, you know, to your list, whatever that looks like. But, you know, we've been talking about that as well, as how quick data can come and go. Or we were just on a workshop the other day, and someone was talking about having, you know, their inability to get data from a vendor. And so always having a strategy for building that list and, you know, using these tactics intentionally, right? And it's not like a one and done, oh, I had an article come out, or I did 3 months of SEO, like I'm a millionaire now. Just like marketing in general, it's about consistency and showing up and having a plan for that. And so I just wanted to set that expectation. Like, this is a customer journey. And even when you're thinking about SEO, how does that apply to all of your other channels?
Yeah, for sure. And that's something I have to remind everyone, especially when it comes to PR, is some people sort of think about public relations as it was back in the 90s, where you get in the Sunday New York Times and like a third of the country read the article. It's just not that way anymore. Like, there's so much content. An anecdote that I often will share on calls with potential clients is I was on Good Morning America during Hillary Clinton's campaign. Asked Hillary Clinton two very direct, pretty difficult questions. It was national news for the day. Like, every outlet covered it. Within 2-3 weeks, gone. Everyone, like, so many things, you know what I mean? Like it was huge news for a few days. And just the way that the country works and people's mind, like people's attention spans and the way that they get news now, you know, you need consistency. There's like,
Yeah, damn, you almost, you had that 15 minutes of fame, Hillary.
Oh, I didn't like that 15 minutes. I slept that whole day. I'm the person who tries to avoid that. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy I went on. I'm happy I asked the questions. But
you're right. People's attention spans. It's like, you know, ping pong, you know, looking at this to that. And let's be real, you know, yeah, we very often are focused on ourselves. And that's why it is important to tell that story and to show up often, because people, we, you know, they have to take their kids to soccer practice, or they're busy and they've got work and they've got outside hobbies and goals. And so, yes, it's not one opportunity. It's doing these things over and over and over. So I appreciate, yeah, you letting me riff on that, because, I just see so often where maybe people have disjointed funnels, and it's like, hey, it's really that. I know sometimes we can't do an omni-channel approach, but it's that multi-channel approach that's going to help you win. And so I know you all are really intentional about that. And you do a lot of cool work. You do a lot of really, you have different customers, like NFL great Ricky Williams. And I like that story a lot. And, you know, I've definitely seen a lot of PR around his brand. But can you talk about the importance of cannabis in general for athletes and raising awareness around that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the way I have always thought about this, is kind of maybe a little broader with it, the way I've always thought about cannabis reform and drug policy reform and reform and advocacy general is institutions, right? Mm-hmm. So like there's sports as an institution, academia as an institution, Wall Street as an institution. And I think each one is a pillar, basically, you know, like that needs to be, you know, if you're talking about like breaking down prohibition, each one is a pillar that sort of needs to be broken down. Mm-hmm. And I think sports is a really important one. I mean, honestly, I think they're all incredibly equally important, maybe. But sports is interesting because of the demographic that it hits. Like, it's such a large group of people. Like I'm honestly not a, I'm more of a politics guy than a sports guy, although I work with a lot of sports people and like political related things.
Yeah.
When I post about sports, I get way more engagement, way more people interested than if I post with myself with a politician or even a celebrity, like an actor or something like that. There's something about American sports culture that it just hits, and it just it triggers action. So from that standpoint, I think it's like massively, massively important. And obviously Ricky Williams' advocacy within that, you know, has been massive.
Well, and I think in general, I think it's going to help destigmatize across America even more if we can move it within the athletic system, right? Just think of Puma, right? And their new ad, and it's got Afro Man because I got high in the background, mm-hmm. and it's showing different types of athletes running. It's badass. And I love that combination of like that, that true stoner culture, right? Which is that we're functional stoners. We're not just sitting on the couch. We're athletes too. We're going to work out. We're busting our ass too every freaking day. And it was like that combination of sports and cannabis that I absolutely love. So if you haven't seen that, go YouTube the Puma commercial, because that was, I think they did a good job with that and tapping into cannabis culture and not playing into any of the stereotypes and, you know, and some of the BS that you see in other campaigns or marketing or in the news. Yeah,
that's smart, because it's a real demographic. So I mean, like, yeah, they're actually hitting a real demographic in a real way that other people aren't talking to. So it makes a lot of sense. It's smart.
Yes. It's very smart. And so, yeah, I can't wait to see more of that as we continue to evolve, and push the needle. So now let's geek out on AI. How are you working with AI, and how is it helping your customers?
Basically every possible, I mean, not every possible way, but we have fully implemented it within the company to drastically improve and sort of like reduce friction with communication. So one example, chat LLM is really good I mean, I love all the tools. Chat LLM isn't even my favorite, but what I really like about it specifically is that it doesn't access the like it doesn't access the internet, so it's only giving you things from your notes. There is no so you don't have to worry about it pulling any fake information or unreliable information, anything like that. And one of the ways that we will use it is we'll upload our client calls, like all of our client information, not just our client calls, but the transcripts, the 3 month strategies we create, the reports we create, all of that. And then if our writing team has questions about what they are comfortable talking about or what they the way that they want to phrase things, they anyone in the company can go in and just ask that client's LLM, and we have a perfectly like a beautiful answer that's well cited that takes us back to the call transcripts or the relevant reports that it needs to cite. So that's been one really great way. We've also started recently having either I and or employees will like code our own apps, basically. So they're kind of like with AI. So one of the tools that I really like is Abacus for for Nisenko, for my team, because it gives you access to all of the LLMs. So like Claude, Gemini, Grok, ChatGPT, more recently they had Perplexity. And it also has an AI engineer bot that could code sort of workflows with those. So you could say, when I submit a blog, have Claude edit it, and then Grok fact check it, and then Claude edit it again, or something. You know, as an example, that wouldn't be the best workflow, but that's just a random workflow that I came up with. So we'll often do that. We still have our blogs, for the most part, are human written, but we're very slowly transitioning. Like it really depends on what our clients are comfortable with. We have clients that still want 100% human. We have clients that want to do their own AI blogs, and we'll just help them with their process for that. And we have clients in between. I've done a decent amount of research. Oh,
I was
sorry,
gonna
what was
ask,
that?
yeah, do you see data between those three type of buckets? Does it affect it, or because the people want to know.
Totally, yeah. I've done a decent amount of research, and from what I could tell, with big disclaimers that things could change at any moment, but by the day, my comfort level is growing a little bit with more AI content. SEMrush did a big study, and it actually showed pretty equal third, a third, a third AI human and AI plus human. The AI plus human got a little bit higher, and that's personally where I think I'm. Which makes the most sense right now. I'm also actually in the middle of creating a so Google also they changed their policy to say that the blog should be written by humans to be written for humans, and they updated their policies. I don't remember what all of the letters stand for. Let me see. EAT, SEO. Now they look for EEAT standards in blogs, which is
Oh,
experience,
yes.
expertise, authoritativeness, and trust.
Yep.
So I'm also building like an AI tool that basically uses like fake personas of your blog demographic to rate blogs based on those four categories. And we're experimenting with that. But what I think, makes the most sense is having well-researched blogs with AI that humans then add their creative extra touch to, right? Like as an example, recently I had AI draft a blog about how to capture leads at conferences, and it did a very good job, but then there was a few things that like I figured out as a human myself that I added. You know, like I added one of the things I like to do after conferences is add my picture to the signature block so they can remember who I am, as an example. So I added that to the blog. So that's what I personally think is the best is having, well, and when I say well-researched, I'm stressing well-researched, not just going to ChatGPT or Claude and saying, write me a blog on XYZ.
Thank you.
I think, go to a deep researcher. Like first, I generally will go to my actual current favorite process for writing blogs with AI is, or drafting blogs, not writing, but is going to Gemini and say, saying, write me a blog outline on this topic, because Gemini is Google and it knows what people like to see. And then I'll take that to a deep researcher, whether it's Gemini or ChatGPT or Perplexity as an okay deep researcher. I'll take it to one or two deep researchers. And then I'll take those two briefs, the deep research brief and the Gemini brief, and I'll give that to Claude. And then there's a few prompts, and I'll say, give me a draft. And then I'll say, now add the inline citations, you know, as embedded yeah. links. And then there's a few prompts from there. And that'll get you a decent blog, especially if you put in your brand voice into it as well. But I still like to add my own and whatnot. And we're just experimenting that with that now, really.
But actually, again, training it and not just using, you know, generic prompts. I think these are key pieces here that I'm picking up is and I want people to pay attention to is you are leveraging AI, but finding those human touch points where you're still able to go in and add that. And I think that is a healthy mix. I've in some of our experience, for example, for a client in the hemp space, they had someone else just kind of cranking through very generic blogs. Like literally I wanted to do a test and I was like, okay, something doesn't seem right. And I mean, they were getting no traffic at all. And I prompted very generically and it spit out the almost exact same content, you know, really. So we had to, you know, obviously change that because their top of funnel was suffering and we were able to get them on a better plan for their top of funnel and their customer acquisition strategy, because it was like, okay, this isn't working. But again, it was not prompted well, and it was 100% AI, you know, just generic prompt, take it for face value, plug and play.
That will not work.
It was abysmal results.
Mm-hmm. That will not work.
And again, this was not our company, but this was, you know, as we came in and started consulting, we were seeing, okay, this is an issue that was going on for some time. And so that doesn't work. And we've seen, you know, the results directly. And so again, when Evan is telling you these things, you know, these are great flipping tips. So make sure you're taking notes because it is really important how you set that up.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. It's that will make or break whether it is a fully useful tool.
Yes.
Absolutely. For blogs, for content, in my opinion. Yeah.
Absolutely. And it is changing the game. I mean, don't be afraid to use AI. There are good ways to use it. And then of course, you know, there are very generic and bad ways that are probably going to get you docked on your content versus using it in the best way possible. But it is changing the game for business owners and marketers. And so, you know, I read, I think on your LinkedIn the other day, you were talking about how marketers can even now do market research and identify target audiences through AI focused simulators. So like, what the hell is that? Let's geek out on that. I want to know more.
So yeah, the next thing I was going to say is actually content and writing is, even though people think about that AI for that being the main use, and we just talked about that as being mm-hmm. a use, in my personal daily life, it's probably one of the smallest uses. I use it a lot more for, you know, like understanding notes, maybe doing first drafts of emails, but research, reformatting data, visualizing spreadsheets that are difficult to like fully comprehend, those sorts of things. And one of the more recent tools, I actually put it online if anyone wants to use it. It's focusgroups-ai.com. I just put it online a couple weeks ago. And it's an AI focus group simulator. So you put in a topic, a purpose, the messages you want to test, and either you can put in your personas or give it guidance and it will draft, it'll do research and come up with the personas and the target demographic. And then it will simulate, takes between 5 and 15 minutes, depending on how many messages you put in and how many personas. But it'll actually simulate a full conversation. Each persona and the facilitator is its own instance of LLM, like it's its own LLM. And so they're all talking to each other. And the facilitator will guide the discussion and ask questions and prod the personas. So how it works is first each persona will give their general reactions, emotional and rational reactions to each of the messages, and then the facilitator will read all the responses, come up with and understand the purpose of the simulation, and then come up with deep dive questions. Each persona answers those questions and responds to each other, and they have access to each other's information and responses. And then the facilitator does a third round, and then there's like a very detailed report written. And it's been very helpful. It's really good for like naming products, coming up with important features to add to products. I even use it to help add features to its own tool. It's good for politics, you know, to message political terminology, like political talking points. It's surprisingly insightful. Like as you read through it, you're like, oh wow, you completely forget that it's AI. It's an AI simulation.
Wow. That is amazing. And this is the cool creative stuff that you can do with AI. Like, again, I think people haven't even scratched the surface. You know, they've maybe logged into Claude.ai
right.
and asked a question or two, or broken a recipe down. But it's like, hey, at the end of the day, these can really help you work way more efficiently. And again, not harder. Like on the ethical AI episode with Brad Bogus, like we said, we're not using technology to just create a world where humans have to work every freaking day now. And you know,
should be the opposite.
Yeah. So hopefully, creating ways within these tools and systems to free up our time so that we can live, you know, the lives that we want to create.
Abundance.
And this is going to get us there. It's going to hopefully level the playing field too for smaller operators, for small businesses who don't have, right, you know, if you're self-funded or you don't have these big budgets, AI and automation are easy ways and the low-hanging fruit to kind of get your business forward on a small and lean team, really.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, as an example, focus groups typically cost $5,000 or $10,000 on the very low end, $50,000 on the high end, and take weeks to do. I set it up for everyone to use for free on the internet right now. So, and I mean, that's like it's a big difference. I mean, it may not be as good as a real life simulator, but even 60-70% as good for 1% of the cost, 2% of the cost. I mean, is crazy.
Yeah. God, that's so true. I mean, because it's like a whole process. I've done a few of those back in the day through Elizabeth Arden and a couple other companies. And it's a process and very time intensive just to even get that. So yeah, you could probably even find ways within your own system to find your like brand champions and automate a discussion
totally.
And focus group type conversation. Yeah, I mean, there's tons of ways.
Use it.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, check it out.
I'm going to.
I'm going to add more too.
Yes.
I'm going to add more. I'm going to add an A/B tester.
Ooh, yes.
And a few other tools.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I love that. My customers were geeking out. They were like, okay, you sound like that creepy documentary called Buy Now, you know, because where they use data to like manipulate purchasing patterns, but that's what marketing is, right? But, you know, I was watching that documentary and they really were talking about Amazon's A/B testing and how the product team created, you know, the marketplace as it is today. And it's priceless. And I think, well, I'm curious, like, yeah, how are you going to build it in a way to help marketers? Because there's questions around, like, how do I use this data now? Like, what do I do with it? You know, and so we train people often of, like, working with them of, okay, based on the results, here's what you would do next. But, yeah, do you have an idea of how that'll work in the future?
I mean, I'd love ideas if anyone has them, but
yeah.
Right now, like, I mean, yeah, basically, it's out there for feedback generally, but
okay,
that will be soon. I'm not entirely sure if I'm going to make that on the same tool or make that on a different tool. Oh, you asked about how to make it functional. So the report itself has a lot about like detailed next steps,
mm-hmm.
But I do have some ideas about like a larger tool that lets you save personas, goals, and re-message tests. So like you can refine the test and do it again. So I have a few ideas, but I'm definitely looking for feedback too.
Oh, I would
I'm not
love to help.
100% sure if I'm going to add that. Please. Yes.
Yeah,
Cool. Do it. I
I'll be
will.
the
Here, I'm
tester of
going
the A/B testing.
to. Cool.
Oh, I would love. But yeah, I mean, that's so
I'll send you
cool.
all of them.
It's such a good way to empower business owners because, again, it can be costly and time consuming without this stuff. And again, you're setting it up in a way that you're marketing minded. You're putting the time and energy to make sure that, your output is going to be worthy of looking at as well, And that's important. And so, okay, I want to pivot before we talk about like a lot of badass marketing tips. I want to talk about innovation in cannabis tech because that's really the theme this season. And, people grumble on LinkedIn all the time about, a lot of innovation in hemp beverage, but maybe not in the cannabis tech space as much because certain things are limited. So, where is the innovation happening? What kind of innovation are you seeing in cannabis tech today?
I mean, not to just like bring it back to AI, but I think a lot of the innovation across the board in technology is really happening with AI. I
Very
mean,
true.
I think there are some interesting technology issues that need to resolve themselves around like POS systems and
Yes.
like
Yeah.
what is fair practices. Like the other day, I was looking up at a dispensary at a minority-owned business, I believe, like it was a social equity business. And with I was looking through their menu, and their POS provider was selling ads to other local dispensaries within their menu.
Oh,
Like
my God.
I was trying to buy a product at this dispensary, and their POS provider was trying to send me to another place. And it reminded me of like Amazon. I mean, I wrote an op-ed about the dangers, honestly, of big tech and cannabis. Like, if we're going out of our way to create social equity businesses, but then all of the data is going to one or two tech companies that could then just steal your customers because they flip a switch. That is kind of like an Uber Eats ghost kitchen scenario. So I'm just interested to see how that plays out. Like I was very surprised when I was in their menu and I saw ad. Like that was very aggressive in my opinion.
Wow, that's crazy. I know it's hard. I think the people calling themselves innovative are the people like weed maps who are trapping people onto services and are actually the opposite of innovation. And then you're losing so much of what you're trying to build as your own independent business, right? And so I hope that we do see some more innovation instead of I want to see less like trapping people on the technology services or data because that's a big issue to your point. And it's not always just the POS providers. But yeah,
Yeah, that was just one random
it's a
example.
few different issues there. So making sure that you are mindful of that and can protect your data. Even think social equity, like if you're a brand, you don't really have all that line of sight into the retail data either. And you're trying to now grow your brand and business. I don't know, it makes it so hard for people to scale and you have to be so mindful of constantly, your funnel of like how are we going out and finding people? How are we collecting that data to remarket to them and having that conversation so you're not just stuck to, your retail partners because if those go sour, what happens to your business?
I have actually spoken to one or two brands about potentially setting up AI to allow them to see deeper, like into the retail level. Like I set up my own AI agent to help me price shop at local dispensaries. It just like goes on to lo my local five dispensaries and tells me
I
which
love
products
that.
I like and what the sales are.
Yes,
So
get
you could
insights.
theoretically use AI to allow brands to see, which flavors go on sale more. Like you could scrape all the dispensaries and then aggregate that data and analyze it. You just mentioned that, so I just it came to mind. But
Yes.
right now that is a problem. Yeah, with for brands that they can't really see anything.
Yeah, it really is. And I do love that idea of aggregating. And you could do that from a competitor research standpoint. Like go if you want to go see really easily what people are doing, right? Have AI agents bubble that up or something. And so let's actually pivot over into the more of the marketing portion, you know, where we're going to talk about some marketing tips and tricks on the podcast. And we'll dive more into some AI tips and tricks. But first, I wanted to talk about something very important, which is if you have a very limited budget, if you're maybe self-funded, if you're social equity business with limited funding, how can you start dipping your toes effectively into SEO and PR?
I mean, most luckily SEO, Google makes it very easy to learn SEO. Like Google puts it all out there on a handbook. Mm-hmm. SEO is not hard to learn if you have the time. It's hard to learn if you don't have the time. So, you know, my suggestion would be to prioritize it, either to spend the time to read Google's handbook, to watch YouTube videos. You know, it'll probably take 15, 25 hours of watching videos, maybe, to really learn it and integrate it, to understand what you should integrate into your business. If you are low on cash, that would be my recommendation would be to prioritize that as a business owner, as an entrepreneur. If you do have a little bit of money, an SEO agency like us could help enormously. Either we do it for you, or we could guide and consult you so you can leverage your time better. Mm-hmm. So you can basically do it yourself without those 15, 25 hours.
Yep.
So that would be my, either do it yourself or find an agency that can assist you on an hourly basis rather than like a full retainer basis.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, with, again, keep bringing it back to AI, but like ChatGPT is, and really honestly, most LLMs now can answer almost anything as an expert. I mean, you could say act as an SEO agent, act as an SEO agent. Here's a screenshot. What should I do? Or I'm trying to add meta tags. I'm stuck. Here's a screenshot of the back end of my WordPress. Mm-hmm. Where do I go? And I do that, you know, I mean, SEO stuff, I don't get tripped up for anymore, but when I'm trying to figure out things like setting up APIs or things that are outside my technical mm-hmm. wheelhouse a little bit, it helps me perfectly. I just share screenshots, explain my goal. Well, what I do is a tip is explain your goal, share a screenshot, and then also say, tell me if you, there's any other screenshots you want to see. And sometimes ChatGPT will be like, oh, show me these other screens, and then it'll figure it out for you.
Yes. Yes. I love that. Yeah, it's just being a savvy and smart marketer now, and it can shave down so much time, and that way you can go to market faster, and you can test new ideas faster, or, you know, be able to pivot. And so, thank you for those tips. And then you talked about a new book, was it ebook or webinar? What are effective ways to generate leads at cannabis conferences? But now I want to know, you know, what are some tips for effective ways to generate leads at cannabis conferences?
Sure. Yeah. That was a blog. But I mean, what we do typically, and we use a little bit of AI for this, but we'll do outreach ahead of time. We also offer this, by the way, as a service, if anybody does want this to just be done for them. But we'll do research ahead of time, find speakers, sponsors, exhibitors, people that we find who are talking about going to that conference on LinkedIn or other social platforms. And then we'll find their emails and or LinkedIn's and reach out to them and try to set up meetings ahead of time. And then we'll do follow-up afterwards as well. And then at the conferences, honestly, like my personal trick is I explain what I do. I watch their face. If they have an emotional, positive reaction, I put it in my right pocket. If they don't and they're just being polite, I put it in my left pocket. And then I make a point to follow up with the people for real in my right pocket. Just explain what I do and look at their emotional reaction. Like if they have a positive emotional reaction, great. If they don't, yeah, they're just being polite and I move on.
Oh, that's such a good idea. Yeah, just being mindful. I mean, and it's all in the follow-up too, because I read a stat, this was a couple years ago. I'm sure it's been updated since, but it was like 84% of trade show leads are not followed up on. It was something very high.
Crazy.
It was wild. And I'm like, what the hell? So think of all the lost opportunity. I mean, I know Benzinga, MJ BizCon, for example, right? We're generating probably probably 40 to 50 plus easy between the team. And yeah, it's like if we had no follow-up strategy, what's the point? The time, the opportunity. I mean, it's tiring going
to these. What is the point?
Yeah. Yep. So making sure, yeah, you have that follow-up strategy. And even I love seeing the excitement people create ahead of time. Like you were talking about, you know, being intentional with knowing the speakers, like reaching out, DMing people, set mm-hmm. a meeting, and make sure that it's a productive use of your time. Because if you get the opportunity to go, you know, you want to make sure that you can get that ROI out of it. All right, really quick, I want to move on to the last couple questions. My last couple questions, I mean, you talked about a couple good tool recommendations, so I appreciate that. But one of the things also that you talked about on LinkedIn that I wanted to ask was around how to leverage AI agents to streamline your sales workflow for sales outreach, right? That's something you all are doing at the top of the funnel. And so that's really important also for a lot of cannabis business owners who are navigating outreach, trying to figure out how to do that with a slim team. And maybe, you know, I think AI could probably help solve for a lot of that. So I would love to hear, you know, again, how you leverage those AI agents to streamline your sales workflow for sales outreach.
For sure. Yeah, I have a whole webinar on Zapier that people can check out, which I was excited to do. Zapier.com, which is like one of the best known automation tools. Zapier just put out, I think it's still in beta, what they're calling Zapier Agents. And it works very similar to like a custom GPT setup for those who are familiar with it. But it also has actions and triggers, which is great. So what I did the webinar on, one of the things that we use it for is for lead monitoring. So mm-hmm. Nissan Co., one of the ways we, you know, we're a marketing agency. So one of the ways that we sort of find qualified leads are companies that are paying for promotion. At any given time, we figure if they're paying for promotion, they might have a marketing budget. So we set up a tool that basically goes. It's an AI agent that every morning, they all have different trigger based. Some are every morning, some are when articles hit our Feedly account. It will look at the article, extract the company that's mentioned in it, and then find the CMO or the head of marketing at that company and their LinkedIn profile and put it on a Google Doc for me. So every day, all day, it's monitoring the news, it's monitoring new conferences that are coming up, it's monitoring job listing websites for marketing roles, and it's finding first the companies, like I mentioned, that are hiring or paying for promotion, and then it finds the best person that we should be reaching out to. And then helps find their contact information. Yeah. So that used to be done by a team of people. We also have news monitoring. So like every Monday, and this morning is an example, our PR team got like a big update of all the news from the last few days with each article summarized. Our SEO team, similar, every Monday morning gets an update on the last week's SEO algorithm changes and anything they need to know, which used to be done by a human. I use it to help with drafting proposals. So I record my sales calls, and then when they're over, you know, whatever proposals they want, I put into, there's an AI that will basically take that automatically and start a draft for me whenever the call ends.
Wow, that's amazing.
So there's tons of ways.
Yeah, and you should be doing that. Like, again, automate or delegate, you know, get those things off your plate as a business owner. You shouldn't be eating up your day because you have a proposal to create. I mean, so whether you're an ancillary, whether you're retail, anyone in the supply chain can be using these tools to be, again, working smarter and not harder. And before I throw you into the lightning round, I've got one more question on AI, which is, what AI mistakes should people avoid when new to using these tools?
Learn what they do and their limitations rather than assume mm-hmm. what they are. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, I've heard great things, so I could ask it to do anything I want, and they'll get disappointed right away yeah. if it doesn't do exactly what they want exactly right away. Yeah. So I would say, like, they are a very, very powerful tool, but you need to learn it rather than it learning you, which I think some people are confused about. And I think that's the biggest. I mean, that's the biggest basic one. I have other tips in terms of like if you want to get more advanced, my suggestion would be, learn the basic chat functions like ChatGPT and Claude, get a little more advanced by adding attachments, maybe like call transcripts or templates that you want it to fill out or extract information from. And then from there, the Zapier agents is a great way to learn a next step beyond that.
And I think that makes sense as like the path forward, and you'd be able to do quite a bit within that scope and understanding, right? And again, just making sure again that you're prompting it, you're training it, and you're being intentional with how you're leveraging those tools. And you can do so much cool stuff. Again, from bubbling up key movements in the pipeline, or hey, so and so switched jobs and they were a brand champion for us and we want to be notified automatically. There's a lot of really cool stuff you can use AI for these days, and let it be an extension of your team to help you streamline operations and make more money. I think this is especially important for, for us businesses who are more self-funded or maybe lack access to funding, because this is going to allow us to streamline so much more than we are ever able to in the past with a small and lean team.
Yep, exactly. That's 100%
Well, very, very
spot
cool.
on.
And I've got just a quick lightning round to throw you in before I let you go.
Let's
You've
do
got,
it.
it's 5 questions. You've got 10 seconds to answer. You ready?
Yep, let's do it.
All right. If you could snap your fingers and become an expert in something, what would it be and why?
At this exact moment, coding, because I'm trying to figure out how to code some AI tools, but
There you
I
go.
probably would have a different answer on a different day.
Yes, snap. And what's your all-time favorite movie?
I honestly don't watch a lot of movies, but Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, that is a damn classic. Hell yes.
Yeah.
What is your favorite? What's your favorite way to consume cannabis?
Vaporizer, without a doubt.
What's your favorite way to relax?
Cannabis and gardening
Yes. Oh,
together. And
perfect.
dogs, all three.
Ah, oh, yes, dogs. I love chilling with my dog. What's the most exotic place you've ever traveled?
South Africa or Peru?
Oh, yes. Oh, I would love to go to either of those places. Wonderful. Well, thank you again. You made it through lightning round, and thanks so much for coming
Okay.
on.
It
Yes.
was
And to our audience, if you need quick links, check out our Market Like a Badass show notes. And that'll have links to social handles. But in your own words, please tell our audience where they can find you.
Nissen Co. is probably the easiest way. N as in Nancy, I, S as in Sam, O, N as in Nancy.com. You can contact me there or my LinkedIn page, Evan Nissen. I think I'm the only Evan Nissen, so.
Perfect. Well, thank you again for coming on. I'll drop this information in the show notes so our listeners can find you. Otherwise, follow us on Apple or Spotify, or go to marketlikeabadass.media for the latest episodes of Market Like a Badass.